This is Jen Gilhoy, and this is the Excelsior Podcast.
All aboard, next stop, adventure. This is Excelsior. She would have never gotten a job in radio if this was 1947. If this was 1947, she would have been a terrible secretary. It's Brittany!
Yay, let's record. Should we set a timer?
In case sure.
We go. In case we keep talking.
I feel like we could talk all morning.
I know. So let's see. What time is it? Just so we can get an idea. So we have until what? Like 11?
Yeah, that'd be great.
We'll do 1 hour because that's a little less than 11. Yeah. Well, thanks, Jen, for coming in today. I'm so excited.
I am too. We were like met and fast friends.
I know. I'm here with Jen Gilhoy. And you are kind of the face of starting a community that is sober and making it normalized.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah. So tell me about maybe your journey. I know you have a TED Talk that everyone can probably just listen and kind of hear about as well. But how long have you been doing this?
Yeah, so my work really starts, 25 plus years ago in Minneapolis in corporate America. And then 10 years ago, decided I needed to change my life. So alcohol needed to go. Yeah. I experienced stress and burnout around age 40 with two littles, working 50 plus hours at a very demanding corporate job. So my life changed when I began to get sober, which to me is alcohol free. And I worked for years at that, and it was a struggle, like being sober, trying to be sober 10 some years ago. AA was the path that I chose and worked. And then it took about a year and a half for full, like, absolute sobriety to stick. And I didn't share my story openly. And about 3 or so years into sobriety, started sharing more. And what I realized is that others needed to hear that message. And I wanted to give other women in particular, because that was my lived experience, give them the permission to explore what a sober lifestyle would look like. And when I was getting sober, I didn't see many successful like women in corporate or anyone who was like really happy and open about their sobriety. And I decided that was a space that I could be in. Yeah. And I really leaned into that. And it just spiraled from there to where I'm at today. And we can talk what that all started. But yeah, that is, in a nutshell, the journey.
Very cool. So tell me the reactions. Because I kind of told you that I was sober 10 years ago is when I decided. And the reactions for me were really kind of off-putting. Like, really, they were uncomfortable by my choices. And so tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of the heart of my TED Talk, which starts with the question that I got for years. Why aren't you drinking? Like, it upset other people that I wasn't drinking. I mean, it just kind of blows me away still. But I had friends in my closer circle just say, oh, Jen, you don't have a problem. You're fine. Oh. Because of the belonging aspect. So anytime you have to realize alcohol and partaking in it is a social experience. And so when you are not doing that and you're the only one, eyebrows will be raised. You will get some questions. And it's not a reflection necessarily on you as you're trying to stay sober. It's more of a reflection on that person's connection with alcohol.
Yeah.
And they want permission to drink. I mean, and this is the interesting thing, is that having the lived experience of excessively drinking, I was that person.
Yeah.
And people would say they were sober and I would be like, oh, you're no fun. And I would immediately go find my people, right, that I could stay at the bar with and drink late into the night, because we had kind of an understood relationship that we really liked alcohol and we would continue to, celebrate or use that in celebration, which is crazy. But it does makes people very uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's so strange. And it is really, it's not our fault. It's like such a society thing that we are so around alcohol all the time. And like, my biggest thing is I really love community and like going and like creating that bond with like, your neighbors after work or something. Mm-hmm. And that's where you go to the bar where you unwind and you like get to know your neighbors, you're social. And I did notice like that a lot of people who are very social beings tend to become alcoholics because of that reason. Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side of that, introverts.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because, and that's part of my story, is I was so shy and so introverted.
Wow. That, I would have never
guessed. Yeah. No, it's right? The perceptions of who is an alcoholic or who has the propensity to misuse alcohol. And as an introvert, I love that it gave me this feeling of inhibition and I didn't have to be so socially anxious and nervous around what that would look like. And so I do know in a lot of conversations over years that, that the social lubrication of alcohol was a way to just put me at ease.
Absolutely. I hear that a lot. Now, tell me, because I feel like, do you still feel like you're an introvert now? Has that changed?
That has changed a bit. I always used to say I'm an borderline ENFP. So if you follow Myers-Briggs, that's, the kind of border between introversion and extroversion. And I feel like everyone has both.
Yeah.
And it's just based on how you recharge. So I tended to feel like I was introverted. And I also took that almost like as a label to not be a leader, not speak my voice. But introverts absolutely have a voice. And I found that through writing.
Yeah.
And then it just evolved into speaking and doing a TEDx talk. So absolutely it's possible for, those who have considered themselves introverted to share a message with the world.
Yeah.
And vice versa, extroverts for sure need to recharge in some way. And they probably have downtime that might look a little different. But we all crave social connection and belonging. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the human experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And some just do it in different ways. Right. Where it's a group of people or all eyes on them. Or was it hard for you when you quit drinking to feel comfortable again without the alcohol?
Oh, for sure. Okay. I mean, I always say for that first year, what they call like white knuckling it, right? So just the only thing that I was focused on was not drinking.
Yeah.
And I think it does take that long to recognize, to let the healing piece of it in. Mm-hmm. But that first year, I just didn't go anywhere. I caught up on sleep from like decades of, just running really fast and doing all the things.
I don't know how you work that many hours and then be able to drink, because that wears your body out.
For sure. Yeah. And to me, it was incredible that I had a really strong, like, workout, physical activity regime, too. And I kept that all up. I kept up appearances. And, I felt like I controlled my drinking, because it would be between, 5 and midnight. And then in the morning, workout, reset, go to work. And it was just like, it's just this insanity cycle. That's how I kept it up. And I would have stints where I would be like, blackout drunk and then not have a drink for 2 months or something.
Yeah.
And while I had 2 pregnancies, I didn't drink. So
right.
Those things happened along the way, which I think is also very confusing if you're trying to assess your relationship with alcohol. You can easily say, I did that, for 9 months. So clearly I don't have a problem. Right.
Which I see a lot of people doing. Mm-hmm. They're like, I just took a month off to convince myself I was an alcoholic and I did it. And now I'm going to go back to my normal lifestyle.
That's exactly the dry January. There's a lot of conversation in our community about that. Obviously, I think overall dry January, if anyone does that, is a win.
Yeah.
It gives you a month of an experience of what your relationship with alcohol is. But at the end of that, do you choose to continue maybe some more mindful drinking?
Yeah.
Or do you tell yourself, see, I'm fine, and then you go back?
Yeah. What is it, like no regrets November 2?
Yes.
They have or something?
Then yeah. Sober October. Almost every month, like dry July, every month has some bandwagon you can jump on to give you permission.
Yeah.
And also make it socially acceptable. That's the one cool thing that those months have done, is just to be like, I'm doing dry January.
Yeah.
And then people I've noticed have stopped like the inquiry and pressing. Do you have, it's more like, well, you might be doing it for religious reasons, health concerns, like people understand a broader range of yeah. why you might, and including productivity yeah. and work and yeah. children and like having to go watch their sporting events in the evening, you know, coming out of a corporate work happy hour. Hopefully, you know, you haven't had too much to drink. So we just see a lot of that in our communities and a lot of conversation about the benefits of taking a break.
Yeah. You know, when I said I quit 10 years ago, I did it for 2 years. And
wow.
And
then congrats.
I had, thank you. But then I had a bad breakup and kind of went back to mm-hmm. it. But it wasn't the same relationship with alcohol. It was like more of like occasions and doing things, but it was still drinking. And within that 2 years, my business was at its best. And I was productive. Mm-hmm. I had energy. I right. could think clearly. And so that's kind of why, like, the dabbling, I had to go back to mm-hmm. that. Because even just dabbling, my productivity was lower.
Yeah. Once you know that and you see that, it's hard to unknow it.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
It's wild. So I really appreciate what you're doing for the community.
Oh, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. And I know a lot of restaurant menus are because of you.
Are we going to go there? Yes, let's yeah, go there. Let's restaurant NA menus, yes.
Yeah, I see a lot more. So mm-hmm. tell me about how you, because you work with different restaurants, right, to kind of help them try yeah. to get stuff on the menu.
Yeah, for sure. So just kind of picking up on our earlier conversation, the couple things that came out of me being openly sober was the formation of Zero Proof Collective, which I co-founded with Kate Faulkner in May of 2022. So we're coming up on 2 years.
There
yes.
you go.
Oh, I love that. I didn't know that was coming.
I know. That was so a little fun. Louder, but that's okay.
That's okay. Yeah. No, it's a celebration for sure. Because, you know, when Kate and I came together, she was very interested in changing the menu
yeah.
and educating bar and restaurant owners about the importance of NA. And I came from a community and cultural background where I just wanted people who were trying to be sober for whatever reason to have really great experiences, whether it would be at an event or at a restaurant. So Zero Proof Collective founded with the idea that we'd bring together leaders in the non-alcoholic industry to overcome barriers, because Kate and I immediately saw, you know, that there would be challenges to that.
Yeah.
I mean, so many people say, well, why aren't you in this restaurant? Why don't you have more NA here and there? And behind the scenes, there's a lot of resistance, whether it's, you know, the idea that non-alcoholic beverages don't generate revenue. If we have too many NA beverages as an establishment, are we going to look like we're trying to police people's alcohol consumption? Mm-hmm. Like, people go to bars to have permission to drink. They yeah. want that, right? So these hidden barriers, and also the understanding of staff and the service when someone is, you know, choosing not to drink, what does that look like? So I was on the cultural side, just so curious about that piece of it. And Kate's has an amazing background in product and mixology. So we came together and we do, you know, I've heard Minneapolis is pretty on the forefront of, in terms of like our restaurant community offering NA. I hear people coming back from the different, you know, East and West Coast saying there was nothing.
Yeah.
That's very encouraging. I mean, we think we have a strong recovery community here, but our work isn't necessarily geared toward people who are, you know, in recovery, considered like AA, that community, because those people aren't necessarily the ones asking for a non-alcoholic. It's more people in the middle. So our vision is, you know, to have people do non-alcoholic, maybe their alcoholic beverage in the evening, but mindfully drink. And if that shifts the bars and restaurants being able to offer these things, then people in recovery will definitely benefit. But you have to remember, those people typically have been told, don't touch anything that resembles alcohol. Mm-hmm. And that's the message I got in AA. I mean, I didn't even touch an O'Doul's, which yeah. was all there was, you know, for 5 years. And about 5 years into my recovery, I was like, you know, I've been told that, but I have worked so hard to heal and rewire my brain
yeah.
that I don't believe the non-alcoholic, you know, NA beverage would be triggering to me. But again, we always say that is a personal journey.
Yep.
And people that are what I call sober necessary, absolutely draw that boundary if you need to. So our work is really for the people in the middle And then if that is enough to like shift society and have these offerings everywhere, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I love NA beer because yeah. I love beer. It's like,
oh my gosh. we should put out a list of recommendations after too.
Absolutely.
Because we have certainly over 2 years tried, you know, from the NA wines, the beers, the spirits, and yeah. even what we love now is things that don't mimic alcohol. So there are some top brands that have like a zero proof whiskey, and that's all fine and good. We have discovered the world of botanicals, adaptogens, and just other things that just people don't even know how to describe because it's such a new product and it's such a new market.
Yeah. So, first of all, I went to a restaurant the other day and had a non-alcoholic old fashioned.
I was with you.
Right?
Yes, you're talking about that night?
Yes. I loved it.
Yeah. So good.
Mm-hmm. I was impressed because the old fashions, they taste good.
Mm-hmm.
And I can still enjoy it, like something that's just liquor.
Yeah.
How does that work? But mm-hmm. it does. It works.
It does. It works beautifully. And to have that on the menu and then clearly like have the NA version of it mm-hmm. with all the ingredients, they list the brand, you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
So usually at a restaurant, what we say is not an ideal experience is to have nothing on the menu that's NA, but then the server will say, well, we can make you a mock something, a mojito that, you know, but it's not on the menu.
Right.
And then you have to ask and you have this lengthy conversation and honestly, you don't know what you're going to get. To me, it says the restaurant or establishment or venue hasn't put enough thought into being intentional about serving that customer.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And that is an awkward position. Why do you have to draw attention to yourself constantly?
So awkward. Yeah. I mean, that's why most of the time I would just be like, I'll just have a water. I mean, like, do you have a club soda with lime, which we call the last resort, so.
Yeah, because that's all they have. That's right? Like almost a guarantee.
Right. And you would hope they'd be able to make that for you.
Did you ever get, back when you quit drinking and you ordered something like that, oh, are you pregnant?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, luckily I was a little bit older, so not as much. But yeah, absolutely. Pregnant women are just like, oh, my gosh, is this what it's like? Like whispering to your bartender, okay, so I just ordered a gin and tonic, but I really want this and bring it to me on the sly.
Yeah. And being a bartender, I get that a lot.
Yeah, I'm like, sure you did.
Hey, I'm going to order a gin and tonic, no gin.
Yeah,
and
so, right.
Got it.
Like, yeah. And then unfortunately, it sometimes comes in a glass that looks very descriptively like a, you know, a kiddie cocktail or something. You're like, oh, well, that's a little bit of a miss.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then they have rules too at the bar, like,
because
in case they mix them up, because there's so many drinks, like, you know which one is. So.
Yeah, and I appreciate that too. I mean, that's a lot of what we talk about in Zero Proof Collective is having, you know, special drinkware that even like staff and service can tell that is a non-alcoholic beverage. You just have checkpoints because that's the last thing you want to do is serve someone who's trying to abstain an alcoholic beverage. And that has happened to me. It has happened to many in our community.
Yeah. And it does happen. I've worked at a restaurant where we did you can do this NA version, but they look exactly the same.
Right.
And I've had somebody accidentally grab the wrong one, give them and it stinks because it's like, are you sober? Or are you pregnant?
Right.
Are you, what's
your relationship with this experience right now?
Yeah, because it could be
really bad. I mean, when it happened for me, I had one sip of the beverage and I could tell. And I like left the event and was like more so triggered by the idea that I wasn't supposed to have that experience.
Yeah.
And not that it like actually triggered me to drink. It did not. But having that really made me kind of do a check, like, this is something that needs to be addressed with service and wait staff, just to understand the seriousness of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it is pretty serious.
Yeah, it can be for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they do make, before NA beers were really sugary and like
you
could tell.
For sure, yeah.
But now, I had them pour it into a glass once, an NA beer, and they like took the can away and I drank it. And I was like, can I see that can?
Yeah,
because this feels
proof.
Too real.
For sure.
And I'm like, I don't feel comfortable drinking it. Like, it's really good, but like too good.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's possible. And it's so interesting that people who, you know, drink alcohol. I've never tried an NA product, have an assumption of what it maybe used to be 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And the products have just come such a long way that most people try it and are like, wow, I can't even really tell the difference.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that too.
Yeah.
No, I've seen a lot about the botanicals. And what was the other?
Adaptogens. Yeah. I mean, it's just, we call it the Wild West because technology and the capability to de-alcoholize products and to add all of these things to cans and the makers has exploded. So like trying to regulate that industry and figure out what's what in a beverage is still TBD. So with Zero Proof Collective, we stick to completely alcohol-free, which to us, when we say zero proof, means anything 0.5 ABV, which is alcohol by volume, or less. So it's like a general category.
Okay.
So there are beverages that are 0.0, and then there's, you know, beverages that are up to 0.5 that are considered zero proof because your body's going to metabolize it so quickly, you won't have any sort of effect from that.
Yeah, like the some of the NA beers have that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and you look at some of the, I don't even know if it was like 12% ABV for a recent beer I discovered. I was like, wow, the beers are, you know, really edging up to ABV. Yeah.
12%?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's like double, what, double, triple IPA kind of thing. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, I mean, the category is just so wide open. But yeah, just to, I think our main purpose was to show like people how they could be in community without having any sort of substance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And make it like normalized.
Normalize
because why
it.
Is it that the sober people just have to stay home and not have fun?
Right.
I know. I get that. Because I love to go out. I'm a social person, but I
For sure.
I don't love it. And it does, a lot of people don't feel that way. They're like, well, if I'm not drinking, I'm not going out.
For sure. They're like, what would I even do?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and for me, I had, I'm in events, I'm in corporate events. So there is like a, you know, professional purpose to being out in that community. So I had that as like an experience to say, you know, I could at least enjoy those experiences again.
Yeah.
Going to a bar, for example, at 10, 11 o'clock on a Friday night, different story.
Yeah. I also think that like for me, like I know there's like a lot of THC drinks and there's a lot of other things that you can do to chill out.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I can't handle like THC and stuff. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, Brittany as a podcast host extraordinaire. Did you know she doubles as a gifted photographer for weddings, businesses, headshots, portraits? Don't settle for a cell phone photo. Call a pro for any of your photo needs. It's Brittany Photography. Everyone has a story. What's yours?
It's like, how do you teach people interpersonal communication and how to just enjoy themselves?
It's really hard.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like in January of 2022, kind of before THC and all these other categories, there was a moment where people were just kind of substance free in many ways. But I think in, you know, the last year or two, people have been moving from, they're omitting alcohol, but they're immediately adding other substances, gummies, THC, like all of that. So there's not this like pause to really figure out a completely substance-free experience. So if you don't have that baseline, I always encourage people just to figure out what does that look like.
Yeah.
Because the THC products, essentially you're altering your experience. I mean, I've been at events where there are a handful of people doing, you know, consuming THC beverages. And again, it just, the experiences that we've created, like through Sauna and Sobriety, which we'll talk about, is the idea that there is no substance. And that is a baseline to say, okay, everyone here is in the same, like, mindset, unaltered.
Yeah.
And that's powerful. And so we've leaned into that quite a bit and just had a great event that you were at.
It was so fun. Oh my gosh. Mm. I love saunas too. They're kind of like addicting.
Yeah, they certainly are. Yeah.
Yeah. And the cold plunge, like they had the buckets for the cold plunge, right? But do you ever talk about cold plunge in that? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And I use the term cold immersion. So that can cover like getting in a lake. It can cover getting in a controlled like pool that's cold. Okay. It can be the bucket. Like, so the idea is going between the extremes. And that's where I also 5 years ago discovered that benefit and the correlation to sobriety is that what it does is it places you, your body physically in an uncomfortable situation. Like you got to be with the heat. You got to, you know, be with the cold, let it, you know, pause a little bit and be uncomfortable. And what I realized was that, you know, in addiction, you, no one has a pause. They just go right from want and reward. There's no pause.
Yeah.
So if you can use the model of that to say, okay, I'm like create some space to make a different choice in addiction, which is huge. So even, you know, even 30 seconds, even a minute for you to say, okay, wait a minute. I know that I'm experiencing this like desire, craving to have a drink, but let's play the tape. What happens every time I have a first drink?
Yeah.
And once you can create a little space for that, you can start to make a different choice.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. Yeah, I do have to say that I went to the watershed where they had the the plunge for the first time. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. But then I went in slowly with, I would like the pause and I like just deeper and deeper. And like my mind was like really there. And by the end of it, I was fine. Like, I was wiggling around. You know,
crazy,
you're just
isn't
like, this
it?
Is
yeah.
fine.
Mm, it's fine.
It almost feels like winter in Minnesota, to be honest, is what it felt like.
Yeah, for sure.
So.
Well, and a member from Watershed was at the event that we were just at that I know you connected with, so.
Heidi?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. So, I love Heidi.
I think it's so great that there are so many different sauna cold immersion experiences in the Twin Cities, and that's how we're inviting people in to, like, something that is an adult social experience that can be intimate as you'd like it to be. And it can also be something that you just choose to go to on your own. And you're going to be like in a sauna with someone, with people versus like going to a bar. I can't tell you how many women who are single and sober are like, I just went to the bar and read a book.
Yeah.
Because it just like, how do you socialize at a bar without some assumptions that, you know, you're looking to, you know, hook up or whatever that is. It's just a weird social thing. So this takes, I love that it takes that away and it really demonstrates like the value of community and the proximity and the space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I just really hope that down the line that we have bars that are just fun drinks and a place to socialize and maybe like two alcohol items on the list or something or maybe nothing.
Well, like, and that's part of my vision is to reimagine social experiences, because if you look at how America is structured and all of the revenue from alcohol from airports to bars and restaurants, you have to say something has to change with the design, the layout. You know, bars are often at the center with all of the alcoholic bottles and labels displayed. Like it's, you know, until some of those things start to shift where it's not so visual, I feel like there's just so much room to explore that. And I feel like it does need to happen. And this Sauna and Sobriety is a perfect example of creating a social experience that's, you know, not that.
So tell me how you started Sauna and Sobriety.
Yeah, well, it really came from my experiences with thermaculture at the Hewing Hotel. So downtown historic hotel, third or sixth floor, they have cold immersion and a 22-person sauna. And I started going to those over 5 years ago and immediately just noticed this could really benefit people in early sobriety, really, truly benefit. And so that's my personal experience. But then it was, you know, 3-4 years later until I met two other women who shared that same passion. And that's Paige LaBrèche, who did the guided thermaculture experiences, and then Natalie Lang, who's a Reiki healer, just an intuitive healer. And we, the three of us, were like, this is really something. And we need to not just be here for, you know, people who, you know, want to come in and physically experience the benefits, but we need to invite in the sober community.
Yeah.
Like, what would that look like? So we had talked about it for months and just sort of started modeling it after the Great Northern Sauna Village in January of 2023, and did a couple soft, like, events, not even thinking we would, you know, what it could be.
Yeah.
But after a couple events where we, like, sold out at a residential area, we decided to just make it a thing. So we launched that May 5th, 2023.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard so much about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, a ton of my friends, not this event, but the one before, I've heard so much about it. And I saw, like, oh, I know that person. I know that person. I know that person. Like, it's such a great community, and you have a good group of people going.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, it's good people. And
it's awesome. Yeah. I mean, we just had our 11th event, so we do a monthly, or we have been, and it just feels like we get about, you know, a third to half of returning.
Yeah.
Each time. And then we pull from new communities, and, like, the recovery community recently really showed up in a big way.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, which was great. I mean, that's who this is for, ultimately. But the other piece of it is, there are definitely people who, what I would call, aren't, like, sober necessary on the spectrum, like I identify with. They just want a different experience socially.
Yeah.
And so what I love about that is it's an integrated, like, people that may choose to still occasionally drink, but they're coming to this particular experience without that.
Yeah.
And it's the integration of that that's really exciting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now you guys have usually music, like a DJ.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then this last one, you had a breathing coach.
Yeah.
To talk through the
Isaiah, the breathwork messiah.
Breathwork. Yeah.
It's amazing. So, yeah, we just landed on this, like, it's almost like a 4-hour format where we have sauna as the core experience. But obviously, you're not going to be in the sauna for, you know, 2-3 hours of that. So it's activation, and it's movement, and it's providing intimate spaces for people just to have connection. So there's, you know, the cold immersion bucket. We did, sometimes we've done yoga flow for like 25 minutes, and we have different sessions all throughout the night, and it's kind of organic. So basically our community shows up knowing that these activities will be happening, and they can decide what they feel like in the moment.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do anything.
It's not like you're signing up, you have to do this yoga session.
Right. If you don't feel like it, just take it, chill out in the sauna.
Yeah.
And don't, you know, don't even feel the need to talk with anyone. Just sometimes listening to others' conversations is enough to feel connected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I really liked your mocktails, your sauna.
Yeah.
Is that the sauna water?
Yeah.
Is that you?
No.
No, okay.
So, yeah, so I'll explain how all of that works. So usually the bar, supported through Zero Proof Collective, which is the, you know, one company I founded with Kate, we work with a couple different product producers in the NA space that we love. And so we don't have a product we produce. So sauna water actually comes out of Cedar and Stone Sauna and then Portage Brewing in Duluth.
Oh, wow.
And the two of them came together so to create that botanical juniper, cardamom,
ooh,
lemon, grapefruit product that it's just a very subtle name, sauna water, but it's amazing. Our community loves it.
Yeah.
So they're a sponsor, so they donate product and we serve it. Tennyson was another one that we had. And we, when we talk about, like, what we call our beverages, we do call them non-alcoholic cocktails or NA cocktails or NA beverages. We don't always say mocktail because mocktail implies you're mimicking an alcoholic drink in many ways. So just, like, language things like that. And we talk, that's what we, when we serve people, that's the conversation we're having. We're explaining these drinks are all low in sugar. And that's what also was really irritating to me and has been through trying to find things on menus, is they're usually pretty sugary.
Yeah.
So ours are low sugar. Like, the Tennyson is phenomenal. It's a really bold, spicy, forward botanical, but it has health benefits. So we, at the event Saturday, we paired it with a little pineapple, a little sparkling water. And then we had another local company called Shrub Shrubs that have, like, a strawberry shrub. And people just, you know, it's just light and refreshing, and it pairs with sauna. And we just serve drinks openly all evening. We don't charge extra. It's like one ticket price, so you don't have to worry about that piece of it, and you can just enjoy the evening.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Very cool. Now, the health benefits, too, I think that would be so great to have, like, a cocktail, that a non-alcoholic cocktail that you have health benefits.
I mean, I drink Tennyson for breakfast because it has digestive properties.
Oh my gosh.
It's wild. And it's so the ritual of it too, right? People are just looking to identify with some sort of ritual and unwinding. I mean, that's the biggest thing that people say they use alcohol for, right? Is like just unwinding at the end of the day, feeling social. So if we can show them that these NA beverages provide some of those same kind of vibes, then that's a win. You know, if people walk away saying, wow, that kind of experience being completely sober is possible. It's enjoyable. I mean, our events end around 9 o'clock. It's like, go home and get a fantastic night of sleep.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that night, like, nice? I always like to go out, have a really good night, wear yourself out, and then sleep.
Yes. Right.
I love it. You're like, oh, that was such a good way to end a night.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm not one to very often to sit and watch a show to unwind. Mm. I think, like, I don't know, maybe that's I like to go out and like do that, but then if you're drinking, you can't sleep.
You have that extra weird energy that you wake up at 3 a.m. and you have anxiety.
Yeah, that about, anxiety. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like even one sip or one glass of wine, anything, my heart would be racing before bed. And I don't know if that's...
Yeah.
Anyways, I love what you're doing. That's amazing. Now, tell me about the Zero Proof Collective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so as we were saying earlier, it's just we founded it to bring NA leaders together and overcome some of the challenges we have. So we wanted to create a way to have collaborations happen. And some of those, like we host bi-monthly meetings where 30 some of our people in the Twin Cities area get together. So it might be a maker, it might be a general manager at a restaurant, might be a corporate event planner who just wants to figure out how to get more NA into their office and events.
Oh, cool.
And so we've had a lot of really cool collaborations come out of that. And one of the other things Kate and I have been doing, because our revenue model really isn't about getting into restaurants and consulting, although we have done that, we have also tried and done many successful non-alcoholic corporate bars.
Oh, wow.
And those take a lot of planning and a lot of work, but we have learned a lot. We've done almost 50 events in the last 2 years at a large scale where we're serving these beverages and having conversations. And then I would say the third part of what we've achieved through Zero Proof Collective is media attention. Really trying to be experts in the space. And what does that look like? And so, you know, we've been on different media talking about Dry January, a lot of different podcasts, and just spreading the word and encouraging, you know, those who want to experiment with an alcohol-free lifestyle. Like, how do you actually do that?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. So how does the bar work? Like, you're kind of just like, and I'm assuming you don't need a liquor license.
Right. That's the beauty of it, right? More people should reach out to us because it's very affordable to just have NA beverages. We do it in a complete different range. So I have went into corporate events where I just have ready-to-drink product, which is super easy. You don't need any bartending training. You just open a can, maybe mix it with sparkling water, serve it in a nice glass with a garnish, and you're good.
Yeah.
So I've done that for many corporate events. And then we've also done corporate events where we are doing like a mixology, like more of a experience like that. So you're getting a cocktail with, you know, 9-10 different ingredients and flavor profiles.
Yeah.
And that whole experience looks a little different than like the ready to drink. But just to say, we've experimented with it all, and it is possible. You know, anyone who wants to try to bring that to a corporate event or even at their own, you know, backyard barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Super easy.
Wedding?
Yeah, a wedding.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Weddings are very alcohol heavy.
Sure are. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To have an NA bar, I think that'd be so great to see more, even like catering companies. Like,
oh, I know.
Having NA bar options or...
Right. One of the challenges we have now is coming into some of these venues who have relationships with catering companies who then have, you know, relationships with the distribution model in America, which is very alcohol forward.
Yeah.
So like trying to get an NA product into the service is really challenging.
I bet.
Yeah. So we've run into that quite a bit. And I always start by, you know, encouraging, like, who do we need to talk to see some significant change, especially at our sporting venues? you know, like Xcel Energy and Target Field, locally, Allianz, like what would it take to have more than Bud Zero, you know, available,
right.
Which is great that that's there, but it is often hard to find and it's one option and it's controlled and regulated because Budweiser, as the alcohol sponsor, you know, owns that contract or has rights in that stadium. So there's just, again, when I say barriers, that's what that looks like. So okay. A lot of, you know, members of our community are like, why can't you just do this? And I was like, well, behind the scenes, there's just a lot of structure and systems that don't support it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope that that changes. It just takes a lot of persistence.
And a lot of, you know, we have a document that is all about the cultural conversations that need to happen at these, you know, venues and at the leadership level. And it can't just be like the week before the event.
Right.
You know, with a gala, you want to start, you know, a year out talking about what does that look like? How do we, you know, make this happen, because there are a lot of things that obviously need to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you single in the Twin Cities? Are you sick of Tinder, Christian Mingle, and OkCupid? Meet real people in real life for real. Go to stassidates.com. That's stassidates.com. If you don't know how to spell dates, maybe you shouldn't be dating. Stassi Dates, the land of 10,000 dates.
Yeah, wow. How many events do you usually do?
Well, like I was saying, we've done like about 50 in the last 2 years. And those were, you know, our variety of pop-up kind of easier events and larger scale events. We're doing Wine Fest coming up.
Oh.
Which is a huge opportunity to be in the midst of, you know, the wine sommeliers of the country and all of the sampling over 4 days that is done of alcoholic wine. And we get to be a voice for the non-alcoholic options in the space. So,
I like that.
Yeah, we really do too. And again, it's not to say we're taking away alcohol. It's a both and it's, you know, these sommeliers with such appreciation for their craft and art of creating wine. It's encouraging to see many of them experimenting with some of the new technology that takes their product and de-alcoholizes it.
Yeah.
And what does that mean for people that, you know, in the restaurant industry and in the, you know, bar industry that are just romanticizing about wine, which I did. I was a buttery Chardonnay girl a long time. And I was like, I can't imagine my life without this.
Right.
And think of your livelihood tied to that. How do those people make change? Do they have to leave the industry completely? You know, what does that look like? And now this NA wine for them, a lot of people who have chosen to be sober in the industry are gravitating toward, well, I could do that. I could be an NA product rep and still talk about the creation of the wine and all of that. So it's really cool to see that happening more.
And I'm so curious about the pairing with the NA wine.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
That would be... I would love to go to an NA wine pairing event.
It's so cool because what we really discovered was that pairing these products with food is an entire like evening experience. So for example, if I'm just going to go to a bar and drink a couple non-alcoholic beverages, I'm there for an hour and a half tops.
Yeah.
Right. But these NA pairings with dinner our three-hour experience, and you understand how it pairs with food. We've done and experienced several of them. Kate and I have went to different ones around the city, and then we've also either led or taken a leadership consulting role on a few.
Oh, wow.
One restaurant in particular we love, Six Smith. Finesse Luna is amazing with her staff and culture around offering NA. And she just did an NA wine dinner and pairing that was exceptional.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And I mean, so many people were like, where's the label on this? Are you sure this is NA?
Yeah.
I had one bread where Kate and I would just look at each other and go, is this for real? Like,
it's come
a very long way.
That sounds awesome, because I know I've tried a few NA wines and they're not.
Right. The red in particular has taken a long time to kind of, you know, perfect, because anytime you're going from a higher percentage ABV and trying to recreate that, it's harder.
Yeah, no, I'm curious. I was always very curious about, like, the kind of NA whether it's like wine or something with like a tea and like yes. using different things. Yeah. Is that kind of something that...
That is huge. So okay. like one of... And I'll just mention my relationship with the wine company because I think they're a great example of, you know, been around for 30 plus years in the Twin Cities community. They're B2B, direct to bars and restaurants locally. But a couple of years ago, they made an intentional effort to say, what are also the non-alcoholic wines and products we could bring into the relationships we already have with restaurants? So they've been doing that, and they have a line of, you know, 10 plus products that are non-alcoholic that they bring in along with their alcoholic products to share. And they've just been a pioneer, I think, mm-hmm. in that way, to say we're not afraid to also be very forward about our NA offerings and the need for a bar or restaurant to have them. So the Drink Proxies is a brand that I discovered through the wine company. And they are like that tea. They're a non-alcoholic wine alternative. So they're not, a lot of these haven't even been wine to begin with and de-alcoholized. They literally are teas and different yeah. botanicals and flavor profiles
okay,
that yeah. are just astounding.
So I think tea could really yeah, have a big...
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I know that when I was first sober, I really loved wine. And I would do straight cranberry juice in mm-hmm. like a wine glass.
Yeah.
And it did the job. I could sip it because yep. it's not something you could drink really... Yeah.
Right. So totally.
Just something with like a bold flavor and using teas to kind of bring mm-hmm. that out, I think would be really a fun... Even to experiment, try yeah. to make your own favorite.
Yeah, like, there's so many. There's Three Spirits is another local brand that I just have tried. They have a product called Spark that is a really great wine alternative. Same concept. You know, oh, cool. it's like something completely new and different, but it pairs so well with food. I'm always thinking when I try yeah. these, what do I want to eat with that?
Yeah,
you know,
that's one yeah. of the things that you think you lose when you don't drink right. is that fun. The fun part about right. drinking, and that's the right. sophistication.
Right, right. Even pairing. Having, I have a friend who's always like, I would love, like when I cook, she loves to cook. So when she cooks, she'll pour herself a glass of red wine.
Right, and then while you're cooking with yes. them, and then, yeah.
Yep, she, and I'm like, well, here, you could try this some night to see if that replaces that ritual enough. And then have your, you know, alcoholic glass of wine at dinner then, or whatever. But just, yeah. right, how are these little kind of subtle ways you can start to just understand why you're drinking at a certain time, why, you know, what is, yeah. what's behind that?
Mm-hmm. A lot of it is just habits.
Habits, completely. And everyone else is doing it, and that's all that's available, right?
Yeah, and just replacing it with something else.
Yeah.
Again, yeah.
For sure.
So that's so, I love it. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite place to go, because like marigolds
yeah has, like, so yeah they do, and it's so cool that we've been kind of tracking non-alcoholic bottle shop openings across the country
okay.
and you know some of them have failed it's an interesting time to be in the space. It's definitely coming where you know an NA bottle shop can sustain itself and have enough traffic and interest. A lot of times we see the successful ones like Marigold when they started. They're right next to a hair salon. They already had a brand and a business. They have an amazing display of retail products that are also fun and engaging. So while it's an NA bottle shop, there's so much community experience and other things going on there. Oh, cool. So they opened there in Minneapolis. They had a second location in St. Paul. And then Zero Proof Beverage House, which is another NA local bottle shop in kind of the Northeast area. Same kind of concept, a bottle shop that, you know, people can go to and actually buy like just one can of something, or you can do tastings. That's oh, cool. the other huge thing. And the benefit of going to an NA bottle shop is you can usually do some sort of tasting and sampling. And then one that I'm super excited about is my dear friend Alex Zahner just opened Lucille's Bottle Shop, and that will be opening very soon. It's been online. You can get product online. It's been online for a while, but they actually have a brick and mortar in St. Paul. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. Very so lots cool. of options.
Yeah.
And it's an education. It's a whole education and tasting game right now for the NA space.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm loving those options as I see them pop up. Now, I also noticed, like, on what Instagram feeds and stuff, where the NA lifestyle is getting so big that I've seen those companies where they're saying, you don't have to quit drinking. Like, drink like a, like, drink smart. And, mm-hmm. like, I don't know what those are. Like, if it's some, like, they must be selling something. But I feel like they're like the alcohol companies are putting that out there because they're getting freaked out by NA. Sure. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is we're doing something right.
It's a little threatening. I look for that too when I see how those companies are behaving.
Yeah.
And it is interesting. It's like they sort of want to be in that space, but haven't quite figured out how to do that or to reconcile that with the glamorization of alcohol that all of their current, you know, and previous marketing to date has been about.
The glamour and the fun. And
yeah, right. And like the other bizarre thing with alcohol is that you really, if you look at a photo on Instagram and a woman's holding a wine glass with what looks to be Chardonnay, you'd be like, oh, she's having a great time.
Yeah.
But then in the caption somehow to say, this is a non-alcoholic beverage, you know, right?
Yeah.
Like dispelling those myths. And I have personally found in my experience, if I am holding a non-alcoholic wine in my hand in a fancy glass, to others, it just looks like I'm drinking and having a good time. And, you know, my tagline is sober, not somber, which is really to say that, you know, the sober lifestyle doesn't have to be somber. It can be celebrated. And there are ways you can, you know, show up and have that experience.
Yeah, celebrate. And then Maggie told me a story that stuck with me too, how she was with a bunch of girls that were celebrating something and they all got the fancy champagne glasses and she got like some crappy paper cup or something. And again, like, you can put a beverage in any glass and you don't have to, like, how is that even a thought that people think because you're not drinking alcohol, you get a paper cup?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's ongoing. Nice glassware.
I know.
It's fun. I think it's more fun to have like a fun glass to drink out of, and that's almost kind of part of the process of the celebration.
Right. But, and you know, a lot of times when those drinks are served by a server who's, you know, waiting on a table of six, let's say, it's not even necessarily a thought to them either. Like, you know, it's just a cultural thing.
Yeah.
I've had, you know, women say, oh, look at this is my picture of a sippy cup. I was given like a kitty cocktail in this, you know, plastic cup with
because
a straw.
Yeah. Again, they order a kitty cocktail and they're like, oh, it's for a kid.
Right.
And then that's just how you serve. It's so crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, it happens. Now I laugh about it.
Yeah.
You know, in the beginning of sobriety, it was like frustrating and I had probably some anger around the experiences, but we've channeled that into just acceptance. I mean, so many people just don't really
and
know.
And educating people, and that's kind of what you're doing, which is great. So what's in the future? What holds for the future for you?
Well, I think the idea of what our social spaces will look like if they start to become less centralized around alcohol. Like, I'm really curious about that. I want to lead conversations about that. And then I think the, you know, Sauna and Sobriety has just taken off.
Yeah.
I mean, the New York Times latched on to it.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, our whole community was highlighted, different sauna builders, different communities. And the correspondent who was covering the story had sobriety himself and so was very interested in this very targeted way to invite people in. And so I think that experience is just going to grow as we attract more in the recovery community, and then also being able to show data and measurement of that experience in terms of helping people maintain long-term sobriety, because the treatment facilities, the whole concept around, you know, America and going to an inpatient outpatient is that in those environments, it can be easy, not easy, it can be safe, and you can actually achieve sobriety. But once you leave that and you go out into the world, what does that look like? And so that's the integration of the pillar that I'm really interested in is the environment piece. So there's, you know, work on yourself, there's work in peers with AA groups, and then there's this environmental social space that people need to learn how to navigate. I didn't personally have any tools, and my returns to use through the year and a half where I just couldn't figure that out were directly related to the environments I was in.
Yeah.
So I have to think that that's others' experiences. And with relapse rates of, you know, 40 to 60% at various treatment centers, they keep seeing people coming back. So how can we show some data and measurement around the social experiences that we're providing and how that helps people maintain long-term sobriety and, you know, and be excited about it.
Yeah.
Not just be like, oh, I'm, you know, I'm making it, I'm getting through life. No, you're actually, you know, have the potential for so much more. So, yeah.
Now, do you work with people in recovery programs ever or give speeches?
We are starting to. I went to Hazelden this last fall and did a workshop on sober scene, and we spelled it S-C-E-N-E. So it was like, what is the social experience, but then also being seen as a sober person in those environments. And it was fantastic to be able to talk to those in early recovery to say, this is what's waiting for you. This is what we're trying to create. And once you complete your inpatient, outpatient, let's kind of hold your hand through some of this experience so you have the tools to maintain sobriety. So yes, and I recently just accepted a position for the U of M. They have a team, a medical team that's dedicated to addiction, and there's a, you know, neuroscience data background to it. And I'm excited to be part of that because there's a lot of academia and a lot of studies.
Ooh, I want to know all about that. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And so then pairing it with the social experience and that belonging piece of it that also changes the makeup of the human brain and the circuits that we can rewire through community.
Yeah.
Less tangible than science sometimes, but there is such an interest to measure it. So I'm very excited about the potential there.
Do you dive into other ways that that alcohol processes and what it does? I think that I just started learning that recently and that information alone, I feel like, is enough to move different. Because people are like, they want to know different aspects of drinking in order to quit.
Yeah, and I think I've listened to a lot of Huberman podcasts that have explained for me how my body in particular processes it in my more of the connection to the brain as well. I've been more interested in that because the dopamine and like what happens when certain people that we call in AA, we call normies, right? Like how come they don't go off the rails, right? And alcohol processes a bit differently in their body where they have some sort of off switch that is the depressant side of alcohol. Whereas my alcohol misuse at certain point in the evening after X amount of drinks would just be like, no off switch. Let's go. Yeah. More. It's like my dopamine receptors were just firing.
Yeah.
And it's, again, it's a disease, right? It's like, it's something that happens in the brain that, you know, the general public, you know, maybe doesn't understand fully. Like, I don't feel like I had a choice at some point. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I'm just going to drink water now.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous because obviously that's the whole root of the disease is that it, you know, is the continuation of that and the craving that just keeps accelerating, that there is no choice at a certain point for someone who is sober necessary or down that path.
Right. And so that's the other thing too, the dopamine. Like I'll even do that with food, I've noticed. So then you bring in alcohol and it's like it's a battle between you and that like thing that's lighting up in your brain. And
for sure. Yeah.
Go.
Well, and sauna increases, like when you get in the cold immersion, if you're in there, I think it's for like 4 minutes, your dopamine increases 250%. So that's also what I noticed 5 years ago doing my first real cold immersion was a euphoric state.
I love that.
And I was like, I can get here without alcohol and then not be hungover and totally remember everything, but yet have this euphoric sense of community and belonging. It's incredible. Truly.
It kind of reminds me of getting a tattoo without the tattoo part. You know, when you get to the water, I'm like, oh, I get that high. I want to go back. Like, it was painful, but let's do it again.
Will you come with me to get my first one?
Yeah, you have it?
It has been on my list forever.
Oh, my god!
I tried to during COVID, and, like, no one, it just wasn't available in the list for, like, a year long. Okay.
Yeah, let's record it to this, make it a whole thing.
Oh, my gosh.
Because that's, you know.
Okay, just warning, when I had what were those called? Those belly rings. I had that put in right before my first pregnancy. And that is probably the time in my life where I like was the closest to completely passing out. Other than like blackout drunk.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. No. So I would need to have someone with me. So.
Yeah. See, and that's funny because I'm not good with piercings as well. But like tattoos. Oh yeah. Like,
okay. Sweet.
Give it to me.
Okay.
It's a... My septum too. Oh my gosh, this one was kind of like, this one was painful.
Yeah.
It's like, it's, I love piercing. Oh my gosh, I do love piercings too. Look at me. I'm
look
just
at
a
you.
Masochist. I'm like all excited.
Bring it
right
on.
Now. Yeah. Thank you for coming on. Oh my gosh, we have 1 minute. We're so good.
Oh,
we are like,
oh my gosh.
I know.
You just intuitively knew that.
I try. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. Oh my gosh, I feel like we have so much we could talk about. And I also mm-hmm. would like to talk to you later about doing a sober speed dating.
Oh, yes. Event. Oh, my gosh. I just had a really great conversation with someone locally who is starting more of like a workshop around finding your own values in relationship. Ooh. And I loved it because it really went in the face of every negativity that the apps can create and the anxiety. Yeah. And I just loved his name is Sean Ryan. So we'll talk about.
I want to talk
yeah,
to Sean Ryan.
I might be partnering with him. So then we bring you in
yeah.
and we could do some collaboration on it. Because I think it's a really needed conversation. And to do, like, to date in a healthy way in today's society is a massive challenge.
And people want it.
Yeah.
But they don't know how to get it.
They don't know how to get it.
Yeah. And how to say what you want, create the boundaries.
Yeah.
Create questions. It would be mm-hmm. cool to create questions.
Yep.
Based
he has done
on...
that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
I'm going to intro you too.
Yeah. That mm-hmm. sounds amazing because we can bring people together, but now how do we give them the tools mm-hmm. to do it constructively?
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, mm-hmm. thank you so much for coming on.
Yes.
I know you're busy. So
it's been so much fun.
Yeah. So